Views and opinions expressed are not necessarily those of the staff or management of the Flavors of Northwest Arkansas podcast.
You can't do drugs before you come in and wait tables.
Yeah.
Were you always thinking in the back of your head, one day I'm going to have my own place?
No.
We scaled back our plans. We started a food truck, which there weren't any at this time. We were the first ones.
Wow.
So we didn't know if that part of it would work.
You start at 9 o'clock, and if you're 1 minute late, you're fired.
Boom.
And yeah, and it paid $6.50 an hour.
I feel like I was kind of the outsider there, you know, like nobody, I wasn't really in that kind of group or team. And so they'd always have me kind of like doing all these really crazy tasks.
Welcome to the Flavors of Northwest Arkansas podcast.
For a second, I thought I was passing out, but good. No, it's moonlighting. I think we're good.
Here's your host, John Engelman.
And I always looked up to him when I was in high school.
Welcome to episode 2 of the Flavors of Northwest Arkansas podcast. I'm John Engelman, your host. If you caught episode 1, I want to thank you. It was a big launch, and I was really, really humbled by the feedback and the number of people that listened. It was far more than I expected. So, again, thank you so much. The BlackBerry, not the cell phone from a few decades ago, but the actual fruit itself, is a particularly good source of fiber, vitamin C, vitamin K, and manganese. The BlackBerry Brasserie in Rogers is a particularly good source of elevated southern food, offering fresh-from-scratch dishes. Owner Hunter Thomason and chef Bernie Martinez launched mid-last year on Pinnacle Hills Parkway and haven't looked back since. Chef Martinez is from Rogers, and you'll see what his influences are all over the menu, and some may surprise you. Hunter Thomason was raised in a restaurant family in Little Rock and was heavily influenced by not only his folks, but a chef in one of his dad's restaurants that he knew he could never work for as a kid. He will tell you why. Also, they just launched something new over there. By the way, no explicit language in this one, so you can even listen with your pastor if you want. How about that? We head to the BlackBerry Brasserie in Rogers next, right here on the Flavors of Northwest Arkansas.
Teachers are dynamic leaders shaping a new generation. They bring a variety of perspectives from diverse backgrounds, innovating how they teach to prepare students for our fast-changing world. They're skilled experts, discovering a universe of solutions, telling stories, inspiring, mentoring, connecting cultures, leading by example. Teaching is a journey that shapes lives. Are you ready? Explore teaching at teach.org, supported by the U.S. Department of Education and 1 million teachers of color.
Welcome back, guys. We are physically at the BlackBerry Brasserie in Rogers, and I've got Hunter Thomason, the owner. I'm accurate there calling you the owner, right?
Correct.
I mean, you're the major domo carrying things, and I call you the owner, but from what I understand, you're also running around and helping where help needs to be had.
I like to say that I sign checks and I clean dishes.
That's the best way to put it. I love that. And I'm also here, Bernie Martinez, the chef. And Bernie's been around Northwest Arkansas for a while, and we'll get into that. But I want to start at the top, guys. I love the idea for the restaurant. How did it happen? And I'll start. Yeah, we'll start with Hunter.
So the restaurant actually came about because I was a part owner in the previous restaurant. My background's more on the real estate side.
Okay.
And I had an opportunity in 2020 to start a barbecue restaurant with a family friend.
Okay.
And it was McLard's Barbecue based out of Hot Springs, Arkansas.
Really? I know McLard's. Yes. I still use that that rub on my ribs at home.
I've got a case for you at the house.
Oh,
if you need it,
so. Yes. Now we're talking.
Yes. So that was my introduction as a restaurant operator.
Yeah.
I learned from the guys in Hot Springs on how to put the business together.
Okay.
And, you know, source the ingredients, find the people, and kind of build the whole business.
Awesome.
Coming from the real estate world, that was a little more hands-off and more, you know, on my own. And the restaurant business, needless to say, requires a team, a strong team.
For sure.
So in opening that restaurant, I met the gentlemen from Hot Springs that own it currently, met all of the McLeod's family that are still, you know, working in that business. And then while they were working with me on that, they asked if I would help them open a steak restaurant in Northwest Arkansas.
Really?
And it was called Ozark Prime Chop House.
Okay.
So in all of that, I did have an opportunity to sell McLeod's to Wright's Barbecue.
Okay.
And in that whole conversation and dealings, the steak restaurant, needless to say, became a back seat for the group out of Hot Springs since they were no longer helping me with the barbecue restaurant as well.
Understood.
So even after I sold McLeod's, a couple months later, they came to me and asked me if I wanted to take over the steakhouse or if I wanted to close it. And I told them that I would be more than happy to take it over. I would learn how to operate it, but I was going to make it what I wanted it to be.
Okay.
And in all of that, Bernie and I shared a mutual friend who had helped me get McLeod started and then helped me kind of revamp things over here at Ozark Prime. And then Bernie and I met, really, you know, kicked it off, got along. And I said, man, I'm no cook, but I'll help support whatever your dream is. And, you know, as long as it's good food and good service, I'll back it. So here we are.
I mean, right? So I know you've already talked about the restaurant business. Did you have previous to that? Did you ever work in any restaurants?
I actually did not. Both of my parents separately owned restaurants in Little Rock.
Oh, okay.
My mom had an Italian restaurant. My dad had a fine dining eclectic restaurant.
Nice.
And a breakfast brunch biscuit restaurant.
Oh, interesting.
It actually, one of them sold around 2017.
Okay.
And then the biscuit restaurant shut down during the pandemic.
Ugh.
It was in downtown Little Rock, and when the community of downtown Little Rock left, so did the restaurant.
Sure.
So it was one of those necessary evils, but I learned a lot of lessons from their experiences and tried not to replicate the, you know, mistakes.
Listen,
and learn from the positives.
Skinned knees are the best way to learn, or burnt fingers. we've all been there in one
sure.
iteration or the other. Want to switch to Bernie here real quick. What was it that made you want to be a chef? What was it that made you say, that's exactly what I'm going to do? That's what I want to be. There it is.
I mean, it kind of took a while to get to that road, but honestly, I was kind of in a bit of a bind between my college, trying to figure out what I wanted to do.
Sure.
At the time. And you know, I think there were three things I was trying to go for, and all of them were just kind of, I don't know, I wasn't really gung-ho about any of it. And I ended up taking a trip to Spain, I think 2011, and doing this trip called the Camino de Santiago. And at the time, I was getting ready to board my plane to Spain, which is about like 7 hours. And so I ended up going to a bookstore and just buying some random book, and lo and behold, it turned out to be an Anthony Bourdain book. So,
oh,
yeah, throughout my trip, you know, and that trip, you actually walk about 550 miles through Spain, and, you know,
good
throughout that time,
God,
you don't really have much cell phone access. So, yeah, I guess I did a lot of reading, and, yeah, I guess I decided around that time that, yeah, I'm going to come back and be a chef. And so I think Anthony Bourdain had a big inspiration.
Sure.
I mean, mostly his writing before, you know, even watching him on TV. So that kind of led to, you know, going back, and they had just started a culinary program here at NWAC before mm-hmm. it was even Brightwater. So
okay.
I was one of the original alumni when it first started, and when it was only like maybe 8 people in this nonprofit hospital at the St. Mary's, which is now what it is, the nonprofit center.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was good times, man. Definitely, after that, I ended up taking my first culinary job with James at the Mill, and that's
the old James at the Mill.
Yeah,
now you're
talking. Yeah,
now,
yeah.
Before we get into that, I gotta ask: Restaurant Confidential?
No, it was medium raw. So
That
was actually one of the before I even ever even read Kitchen Confidential. But
Kitchen Confidential, dang it!
It was good. It was good. Good. Good.
Ah, okay. So James at the Mill.
Yeah, James at the Mill, you know, as soon as I started my culinary career, my culinary school, I started trying to look for a job just so I could apply my studies And that's what they always told you in culinary school. You know, you have to take that and apply it as much as possible, because you know one class a week is really not gonna, it's not gonna really hone your skills. So I tried to find the best place, and lo and behold, they gave me a job there. And I just kind of put in the work to try to, you know, try to make sure that I was doing, you know, what I was supposed to be doing. So. Yeah. Ended up working out, and then after that, I just started doing a bunch of other places, or running a bunch of other places around the area. But yeah. And then until I landed here, so
very cool. I've got to ask, some of the most colorful people in my life that I can remember are through the restaurant business. Period. I don't think that's a stretch for anybody. I need a good mentor story on your way up for both of you. In the restaurant business, because like I said, there's nothing more colorful than those restaurant stores. I was talking to a guy earlier today. My very first job in a restaurant was when I was 16, and it was me and my best friend, still my best friend today. And we still talk about that summer at that restaurant and those people incessantly. Some of them were older and probably no longer with us. But I know you've got one hidden away back there. You can keep it family friendly. You don't have to keep it family friendly. This is all on you. You maybe, since your boss is right here with you and or partner, you might want to keep it family friendly.
Partner than boss, by
okay.
the way.
Way yeah. more partner than boss. That's true. But if you've got one, I would love to hear it. And also, Hunter, this is for you as well.
For sure. I guess I'll start off with, I think my, I don't know, one of my biggest mentors, I'd have to say, is shout out to Sam Diaz. Whenever I was first running Fiamma, this is one of the restaurants that actually opened up, I think, around 2014 in downtown Bentonville, where is it?
Bentonville
Taco is now, yeah.
Okay.
It was an Italian restaurant that was ran by Vetro 1925 up mm-hmm. in Fayetteville, mm-hmm. and they tried kind of doing something similar to that over there. And right after James at the Mill sold, I was kind of looking for a job, and so I ended up getting a junior sous position over with those people, and I feel like I was kind of the outsider there, you know, like I wasn't really in that kind of group or team, and so they'd always have me kind of like doing all these really crazy tasks and just kind of being away from, I guess, outside of all of them. But Sam was actually one of the only people that taught me how to actually make pasta. So that was a very Italian-driven restaurant, so I had no idea how to make it. And I mean, I was always in the pasta room just making pasta for those for them for about, I don't know, 2-3 months until they all ended up kind of somehow I ended up getting the position to be the executive chef there. And
nice.
If it wasn't for her, I don't really think that I would have such a strong Italian influence. But now, like, that's actually my biggest forte, I guess, is authentic Italian cuisine. So it's kind of funny that we're running a Southern restaurant, but
yeah,
you know, my backbone has definitely always been Italian. But thanks to her, you know, it's because of her that you know, I kind of learned how to make pasta.
You have to understand. You can't get on a podcast like this and say you're doing some crazy tasks and not name one.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much, I was making gnocchi for a good amount of time. I mean, I was making sheets and sheets and sheets. I mean, there were times where I'd go there and, you know, I wouldn't see the light of day for about 8 hours. I was just in that pasta room. So,
do you even make it anymore just for the sake of making them?
You know, sometimes I do, but it's a little bit hard on the hands every once in a while.
Sure.
But the gnocchi, it's definitely one of those you have to make by yourself because it just takes years to master. So, even, you know, some of the best chefs that I have working for me right now, you know, they'll try to make it and you can tell day and night, you know, who made it. So,
yeah.
It's just one of those things that you know, it's like a, you know, what. Master's touch,
sure.
You know.
Yeah. So now, Hunter, it sounds like it's a family thing for you. So maybe that's your mentorship into the business.
I was always intrigued by it.
Yeah.
So I actually grew up in Little Rock, and my dad had Furneaux's, and okay. the executive chef there was Donnie Furneaux, and he was the cool guy, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Fantastic, fantastic chef. He had the personality. He was meeting and greeting, and I always looked up to him when I was in high school.
Sure.
I worked in construction. I cleaned up job sites for a
yes.
commercial contractor.
There you go.
But I would take my check and I'd go up to the restaurant on the weekends, you know, and just hang out and see it. And it was back when you could still smoke inside.
Oh,
so
yeah.
We would be up there. Not only was the food great, but the atmosphere was like a party.
Sure.
It was like what I used to hear about in the 80s with Bond Daddies in Little Rock. So everybody would get off on the weekends and go up there Friday nights to smoke cigars and drink Johnny Walker Blue.
Oh, gosh.
So you had all of these guys going up there, and they were the business elite of Little Rock.
Yeah.
But I never got to work in the restaurant. I was never responsible enough to be in Donnie's kitchen. Well, yeah. So I was always just intrigued by the business.
Sure.
Being in real estate and having that background, I've worked with restaurants, you know, mm-hmm. I can tell you that my first year in real estate, I did more negotiations with kids in Springdale with their parents that were opening, you know, their restaurant because they were first generation,
sure.
you know, Americans. Mm-hmm. And I was just always really, intrigued by the business.
Yeah.
So when the opportunity to open McCard's came up, I jumped on it.
That's amazing. Now, biggest obstacle to getting this place open. I know you guys have both been in that phase with restaurants in the past. What was the biggest one here that you can talk about?
This one was unique. So obviously I inherited the Ozark Prime solely.
Sure.
I did have the two partners out of Hot Springs that were supposed to be my, you know, teachers and almost my mentors on the business side. One of them had come from a corporate restaurant background. He had been a chef. He had worked in HR, and he had also written protocols and procedures for, you know, a large chain restaurant group.
Okay.
And then the other one had similar background as me. He was in real estate, ended up with a restaurant through a business deal, and just kind of made it his livelihood.
Yeah.
At the time when we opened McCard's, that group had about 6 restaurants operating at once. So ended up with this one. As soon as I took it over, I wanted to change it. I wanted to get rid of packaged food. I wanted everything fresh. I wanted it as natural as I could. I went vegan for a little bit, so I had a lot of don't judge me.
Stop.
I know. It was a very short stint just to see if I could do it. And then my wife ended up getting pregnant, and we went to Chick-fil-A the next day. So it ruined the veganism for me. But, you know, I really did have an appreciation for good home-cooked mm-hmm. freshly prepped food.
Yeah.
So my friend Taylor, our mutual friend Taylor, introduced me to Bernie, and Bernie said, you know, I want to do fresh prep, I want fresh food, I want high quality ingredients, and I want to deliver an experience. And I said, well, this is going to work out really well for both of us.
Awesome.
So brought Bernie in. The rest of the staff quit from Ozark Prime.
Mm-hmm.
We shut down the restaurant for a week, and then we opened it up with a pop-up menu, about half the size of our current menu, just with the lamb chops, couple steaks, you know, the scallops were on the first menu as well.
Yes.
You know, just a few items that were all fresh just to test the waters. And we still ran under the flag of Ozark Prime for about 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then we put our heads together and we said, well, what is Arkansas? What is Southern cuisine? What is Arkansas cuisine? What's the history and how can we bring it, you know, forward?
Yeah.
Well, Arkansas was founded by the French. A lot of the items on our menu are items I grew up eating in Little Rock, that he grew up eating in Rogers, and were truly Southern dishes that are easy to make, elegant. And that was our goal, is take what we grew up eating, what was nostalgic for us, but make it fancy.
When you were on that sentence and said easy to make, before you finished it, I was about to say, you're a liar, because I've looked at the menu. It does not look easy to make.
It was easy to make at home. It is not easy to execute here.
Yeah, no, I understand. Well, what a beautiful segue, because coming up next, we are going to talk about the menu and something special that just launched here at the Blackberry Brasserie. We'll talk about that next right here on the Flavors of Northwest Arkansas.
As an organ donor, your story doesn't have to end. The good in you can live on. In fact, you could save up to 8 lives and restore sight and health for many more. Sign up right now online as an organ, eye, and tissue donor. You'll be happy you did. And just maybe, someone else will be happy too. Go to organdonor.gov. It saves lives. U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.
Welcome back. I hope you did not just fast forward through that PSA that just ran on organ donation. As some of you know, just about 2 years ago, it's actually about 2 years and a month ago now, I had a kidney transplant, and organ donation's vital. Don't die with organs in your body. Get it donated. Go to, I've got it right in front of me, organdonor.gov. If you want to be a live donor, go be a hero. Go make somebody's life and do that as well. All the information's at organdonor.gov. Do yourself a favor. Do not go to your grave with organs in your body that work, that people need. Okay. Welcome back. We are talking a little bit about the menu now. We touched the surface of it in the previous segment, but I want to get into it a little bit. Love the style. The elevated southern food offering fresh made from scratch dishes. A little more about the advent of that. I know it used to be the steakhouse, but was that your first thought when you wanted to, what you wanted to do with this new restaurant?
My first thought was to find someone who had the same passion for good quality food as I did.
Gotcha. Okay.
And I was fortunate enough to find Bernie.
Yeah. Totally get that. And that makes all the difference, because we've seen in places where that has not been the case, and all of a sudden things get toxic. And that certainly does not seem to be the issue here. Well, tell me a little bit about the lamb chop, because that seems to be what a great majority of the a lot of the reviews about the lamb chop. People come in and get it, and they love it.
So, you know, I was kind of actually used to eating lamb chop over at James at the Mill, because it was always just such a regular item. And I never realized how, I guess, lack thereof there is around the in the area.
Sure.
But yeah, I don't know. For me, it was just one of those things where, you know, it's such a good product that it needs to be, you know, it definitely needs to be showcased. And what better way than to make it a little bit artsy as well. So, yeah, I guess for some reason it's a, I know the reason why it looks so pretty, but we try to make that kind of like our wow dish to let people know, you know, hey, this is, we have, you know, a good lamb chop, and not only is it prepared well, but it definitely looks really, really good. So it's nowadays, you know, a lot of people eat with their phone. So we definitely wanted to make sure that we had something that was going to be kind of like a little bit different than, you know, most places. So
you've got your Instagram food porn, as
for
it were.
For sure. Yeah. That is now definitely a thing. So
yeah, for sure. So how did that come to be it, and how many Lego builds and things like that did it take to for you to figure out this is what it needs to look like and this is what it needs to be?
Well, I had such a short amount of time, so I kind of just played with, like, you know, I just kind of took out my greatest hits and tried to, you know, make up something that I think everybody would be pleased with, you know, especially if something that, you know, it's not very common around the area, but it can be. So
yeah.
And also we are getting get our lamb from Hannah Farms, so it's actually a farm out in Gentry, so we try to get, you know, as local as stuff as possible. So, you know, it's just one of those things to let people know that they're, you know, it's out here. So yeah. You don't have to go to a big city to try to get a good lamb chop.
And sourcing's a big thing,
for
as
sure.
You guys have talked about through this, and that process of securing the sourcing. I mean, there's no reason to get too deep into the secret sauce, but as far as getting that together and getting that done, I assume that's something that takes time and making sure it's the right thing from the right place.
Yeah, I mean, we try to get as much local as possible, just because, you know, there are good farmers out there that, you know, are going the extra mile to make sure that the stuff, you know, tastes a little bit different than your average chicken or, you know, your average beef. So even our beef, we get from about 100-mile radius, so it's still kind of considered local.
Sure.
But yeah, we just use the highest quality ingredients, like Hunter was saying, just because it's, you know, why not? If people are going to come out to a good restaurant, you know, why not, you know, try to use the best quality ingredients over prepackaged stuff? So we definitely try to use that as our main motto here.
Awesome. Now, I want to get a little bit into your influences. Growing up, what was the dish that was made in the household that everyone looked forward to on Friday night? Growing up before turning on the TV and watching Murder on 2020 or whatever it is.
Well, it's crazy because, you know, I come from a Mexican household. So a lot of the stuff that I was used to eating is just, you know, a lot of quality Mexican food. But, you know, when you're a kid and you're living in the South, you most of the times, you know, you're hanging out with your friends and they're just having like hamburger helper. And that's kind of the stuff that you want. So I was a little bit, I didn't realize how spoiled I was until, you know, I moved out and went to college, and I started realizing, you know, I started missing my mom's food. And
sure.
So, also, one of the dishes that we have here actually is a tribute to that. It's the quail dish. It's actually rubbed in a adobo sauce, and it's served with some cactus. So I know cactus is definitely not very popular in the area, but for me, you know, every time I'd smell that with some bacon and onions and garlic, that was like that was me knowing that I was going to eat some really good food. So,
heck yeah.
It's on the menu too. So that's just one of those dishes I'll attribute to my mom.
A little mood lighting, by the way, just happened in here. For a second, I thought I was passing out, but good. No, it's moonlighting. I think we're good. I think we're really good. And that's awesome. Continuing with the influences, and you and I talked a little bit before I hit the record button about there's some Latin influences on the menu,
yes.
Especially with like the Chihuahua chicken sandwich as well.
Yes, definitely.
And there's some Cajun influence as well in there. Saw as well. There's the red bean cassoulet, and there's, of course, the crawfish gravy as well.
For sure.
Tell me a little bit about that, because I know some of that can be considered Southern food, but being able to incorporate it as elevated Southern food and making it your own really kind of helps stand out.
Yeah, so to me, you know, like that, the Cajun food in general, to me is, you know, I think one of the biggest backbones of, you know, American history, just because it is French, authentic French.
Sure.
From people that were actually raised in the area, like the originators of the food. So, I mean, taking those, taking the classics and then just turning it with the things that they have, you know, obviously the crawfish was... you know, a lot of it, you know, we're French trained, so a lot of that stuff makes a lot of sense to us. And, you know, those same with the flavors, the cornbread, the grains. It's just one of those things that works, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'll say. I think it's time now to get into what you guys have been doing now for several weeks. It's the brunch. And I know, I'll start with Hunter on this, because a few minutes after walking in the door, we were talking briefly about it, and he said, "I got one thing on the menu. I'm not. I leave the menu to Bernie, but I made sure to get one thing on the menu."
And that would definitely be the chocolate gravy.
There it is.
Yes, yes. So, growing up, my parents never did cook chocolate gravy, but we had some family friends that would stay with us about four times a year, because my father's friend and his wife would come in because they had some business in Little Rock, and it called them there about four times a year, and they'd stay with us at the house, and she would make it, and they were from Dardanelle, and it was like, if they were coming into town, I knew I was getting chocolate gravy, and it was literally dessert for breakfast.
Guys, I'm not going anywhere today. I'm going to have some chocolate gravy for breakfast. We got some friends in town. They do it every time. I'm not leaving.
Exactly.
Y'all go do whatever you want. I'm getting my chocolate gravy. I'll be here if you need me, though.
It was just a fond memory growing up, and I said, why not? I said, we're doing brunch.
Yeah.
I said, it's Southern.
Yeah.
It doesn't get much more Southern than a biscuit with some chocolate gravy.
I mean, I'm not here to disagree. They have that in Dallas, too, where I was raised. I can promise you that. There's nothing better, actually. I'm kind of an eggs Benedict degenerate. And I saw the beef Benny in there, and I've got to ask a little bit about that.
Oh yeah, the beef Benny. We I think we wanted something that was going to be kind of stand out, and so
you found it.
Yeah,
along with the chocolate gravy, by the way, which I don't know that you can get anywhere else around here.
Yeah, right.
I haven't found it yet.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, no, the beef Benny is definitely kind of like a little bit of like everything that we already have in house, and so we kind of call it the kitchen sink back there, just because it's all just about everything that's good in there that you could have. So
yeah.
You know, house made biscuit, a little bit of a New York strip on there with crawfish gravy drizzle, and a little bit of chipotle hollandaise on top of the eggs. So
salivating, I mean,
you can't
over
go
here.
Wrong with that.
I'm just salivating over here. It's not fair. I love the cocktail menu, by the way. Checked it out here a little bit. And I know you guys have the smoked blackberry old fashioned.
Yes.
My goodness.
It's phenomenal.
Tell me about it.
So what really makes it unique for us is our house-made blackberry grenadine.
Oh.
And that's what really makes it as smooth of a cocktail as you can put on a menu.
Interesting.
It's fantastic. Made daily.
Interesting.
Mainly because we have to go through it every day.
Yes, well, that makes sense.
Yeah,
I hear you. I'm a little bit, and I haven't seen, I know it's on there, but I'm a little bit of a gin guy myself, and I see the Bicycle Thieves. I love the name. tell me a little bit about that.
So the Bicycle Thieves was created by one of our bartenders, and it was based off a movie, and he's not here right now, otherwise I would ask him what year it was, but I believe it's a 70s
okay.
film. And it's a gin-forward cocktail with an absinthe wash, and it is unbelievable. Wow. It's my favorite cocktail on the menu, aside from the Blackberry Old Fashioned.
Interesting. Interesting. That sounds amazing. Finally, if you would, location hours, including brunch time.
Yeah. 3300 Pinnacle Hills Parkway in Rogers, Arkansas. And our hours are Tuesday through Thursday from 4 to 9, Friday and Saturday from 4 till 10, and then brunch is from 10 to 2 on Saturdays and Sundays only.
Excellent. Excellent. I think just judging from the menu, it looks like it's just going gangbusters for you guys, so congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. That is awesome. Every week.
Yeah. Where can they find you online?
BlackberryNWA.com, or you can see us on Instagram or Facebook.
Yes. Excellent. Speaking of Instagram and Facebook, that is where you can find Flavors of Northwest Arkansas. Email flavorsofnwa@gmail.com. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time today. Thanks for being here. Thanks for allowing me in this glorious establishment. I will certainly be back several times over. And finally, do not forget to tip your waitstaff. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.